Hello, welcome back to Unseen Incidents, and on this week's episode, we are ranking all the big striker signings of last summer, going through Isak, Ekitike, Voltimare, Gyökeres, Šeško, and the Chelsea boys to see who is a flop and who's a slam dunk. Then we open up the burn book. While over on the paid side, we discuss the managerial vacancy at Man United and some of the leading candidates for the job, and get into our usual nonsense in anything but football. That's all in today's episodes of Unseen Incidents. So we're back for more episodes of Unseen Incidents. We did actually have to interrupt ourselves just doing the show, like off air, which is what always happens, man. But like... Today we kept it to a reasonable kind of 15 minutes.
I've said it before. I do think that maybe we should just, as soon as we start the conversation, like start the call, we'll just start recording.
Yeah. That is what we've had to do at the transfer flow, because like, Ted's point is that I say all the unprintable stuff off air.
And you then say it what you really think at the start, yeah, exactly. and then you give the PC... uncancelable version.
Yeah, he was like, when you go into pro mode, you're just like, well, you know, he could have more shots per 90. And he was like, off air, you'll say, I fucking hate this guy. I hope he dies before he comes to the Premier League. And he was like, you do realize that that's like, you know, the stuff that we should put on the show. But yes, look, you and I do not have that problem, I would say, but we do have the problem of starting our recording 20 minutes later than we need to, because we're bullshitting about whatever. But I actually did see you a few days ago. You came over to the house with your women, your little women.
and
it was lovely. I got to hold the baby for approximately 10 seconds before she had enough, and because of my, you know, still broken hand, I can't quite wrestle her into submission.
I think that is of your own doing, though, because of the hand. You were also sitting at the time. She's famously reluctant to being held seated.
I think
if you were standing and also able to actually just hold her normally and walk about, she would have been fine.
Yeah.
Because she's quite happy being held by like most people. She also usually loves pale men with beards. I think it's a contrast.
Now we're talking.
So I do think you in future will, you know, bode quite well in her
She and I did get on well during the day, because you know, I'm like desperate for her approval, so so I was talking to her the whole time. But also, she's just got a really open, cheerful face.
Yeah,
she's got such big eyes. She stares at you with these big eyes, and her little mouth is like always on the verge of a tiny smile.
She fully holds people to ransom. Like, she'll stare at people. She does it all the time to everybody when we're out. She'll stare at people and she'll stare at them and stare at them and stare at them until they stare back. And then they're obviously staring at a baby, so they smile. And only then does she smile.
Yeah,
but
okay,
like she's waiting for it. She's setting up. She's like, look at me, bitch. Smile at me. Look at me. Mm. And then when they do smile at her, she then breaks into like a big smile.
Well, look, next time, hopefully I'll be able to hold her standing up. And the good thing is, like, when I'm standing up, she will know that if she wriggles, then I could suplex her,
you know?
Whereas, like, when I'm sitting down, like, it's gonna be hard to do. Like, it's gonna have to be like a leg lock or a rear naked chokehold or something. Like, I think it's important that she, like, that element of fear, I think, is what was missing from the interaction.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to have to do that. Like, plus, I just don't have the strength in my right hand at the moment to just do that. So
I also thought it was interesting the dynamic that evolved in that Bonnie was immediately obsessed with Coco. But then when Goldie appeared, she just broke down into like immediate tears for no reason.
Goldie showed her a ball that Bonnie had been playing with and said, "That's mine," and truffled off. And then Bonnie started crying. The thing is, like, Coco has more like Regina George energy in lots of ways, but Goldie's actually like much tougher than her. Like, Coco's quite like gentle, whereas Goldie is like classic younger sibling, where she's like
emotionally resilient.
Yeah, and she's like, "Don't come for me, I'll fuck you up." Yeah. Like there are times where they're tussling over something, and Goldie screams in Coco's face as loudly as she can and starts like hitting her, which is like not very hard because, you know, she's obviously like made of marshmallows. But like, But Coco has never, ever hit or even pushed Goldie. She will stand there while Goldie's hitting her.
I think that's fair, because Coco is quite a bit older.
Look at us to break it up. Yeah, but most children aren't like that. You know, like all the other kids we know, the other people we know with multiple kids, they're like, yeah, of course, you know, like the older one sometimes pushes over or like punches the younger one. And like, but Coco has never done it. And I always assumed before we had a second child that she would. But actually, Coco's all bark, no bite.
Sure.
And Goldie is like, no, when you hit the red line, I'm like, unfuckwithable.
Yeah.
You know? She's like, I'll just throw hands. So yeah, she's a little toughy.
Coco's Ralph and Goldie's Simon from Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. Is that, yeah? I guess.
It's a bit dark, but sure.
Who's Piggy in this situation?
I don't know, you?
No, Piggy, no, because Piggy's like a total, Piggy's like a total bitch.
Yeah, but he is a brilliant. He's like the.
I'm like the guys who show up at the end. Like those guys who are like, "What the devil are you boys up to? Yeah. You?" And they're like, "Sorry, we murdered a bunch of kids."
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's more like Goldie might be like Janice in the Mean Girls situation.
Interesting.
That's where I feel like we are. She's a real Janice quality.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Coco, I think, is maybe a Gretchen, but with Regina energy, which actually is not the worst thing to be. Gretchen's very anxious energy though, and Coco doesn't have anxious energy, but I do think underneath it is like a little bit worried and a little bit timid.
Interesting.
Like she's actually not a bitch at all, and Goldie I think is like kind of a bitch.
Sure.
And I respect it, you know. I'm like, yeah. Good, like that's how I've raised you, that's what I want to see. Look, fucking hell. Should we get into this? Because like there are a bunch of big striker signings that were made this summer. We're halfway through the season, a little more than that, and we thought it'd be interesting to kind of go through and rate them. So we've got all the names I mentioned in the intro. For Chelsea, we're doing Delap and Joao Pedro and kind of looking at them as I've looked at them a bit as a package deal, but you know, whatever. I wonder, so let's go through the ranking. So here are the tiers of the ranking. At the top, S tier, slam dunk. A tier, great signing. B, fine. C, no. D, oh God. Okay, mm-hmm. So those are the tiers. And I don't know about you, but the way I've done this, okay, there's a little bit of projection of what these guys could become, but I'm doing it on like how they've been this season, you know? So like, yeah. Of course you have to factor in age and stuff, but like, you know, when I'm looking at like Šeško and like Gyökeres, for example, like there's a big age gap there,
yeah.
But like, I'm only really rating how they've been this season. I don't know.
Oh, no, maybe it'll become clear. I'm taking it more into consideration as a entire entity. Like I am focusing on what they've done this season, but taking considerably into account the caveats of where they might go as well.
All right. Well, let's see how that works out.
Sure.
Who do you want to start with here? Which player jumps out at you? Isak has the least minutes here. Actually, he and Delap hasn't played much either.
They're both under 600 minutes.
I wonder if Isak's the easiest place to start.
Sure.
Just because it's like 500 minutes. So let me kick this off. Like I think that under normal circumstances, we'd have left Isak out of this.
Probably, but...
Halfway through the season, be like, he's barely played 500 minutes. Like, yeah. You know, how can we rate him? But that is part of the issue.
Yeah.
Like they bought a peak age player for insane money.
Mm-hmm.
And availability then is a big consideration when you buy a peak age player. And availability is especially a big consideration when we flagged it as a problem when they bought him. And
yeah.
Like in 3 years at Newcastle, he played 64% of the available minutes. In 3 years at Sociedad, 58% of the available minutes. So this is a guy who we knew might have his issues with availability. And this year, okay, it's been exacerbated by him arriving late to the squad, not being fully fit, sure. But they also didn't have a plan for how they were going to use him.
Mm-hmm.
He has also got another injury. When he's been on the pitch, he hasn't been very good. And suddenly now you're like, okay, this guy's got 3 goal involvements in mid-January. He's played a quarter of the minutes. He's due back in late March. And let's say it takes like 4 weeks for him to get fighting fit again. That means that you're getting Isak back at the end of April,
yeah.
Which means that this season is a write-off. Like unless Liverpool are like in the Champions League final, basically, in which case he'd come, or maybe the semis, he'd make it back. And that's totally possible. But you're now looking at a guy you bought at 26.
Yeah.
You might only start seeing real football from him at 27.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I don't know if he can ever pay off this fee. I really don't know if he can. Like, I didn't know if he could at the time, and now I'm really not sure. And I think after this, let's go on to Ekitike, just because it's like,
Yeah, sure.
You have to look at these two as connected a little bit. I mean, like that's all the kind of like off field stuff, I guess. But what do you think about him like when he's been on the pitch as well? Where are you with this one?
I think it's hard to draw like substantial conclusions from his on pitch performance at Liverpool because it is so sparse. It is there's such a small sample size. It is like fractionally over 500 minutes in the league, under 690s, 5.5 90s. But he as a Premier League player, he's so proven that you imagine he will come good at some point. But what we've seen with him at Liverpool so far has been a shell of his former self. Like if you look at his non-penalty expected goals, down 35% on last season. Shots down on last season. He's only getting like he's getting under one shot on target per 90. Touching the opposition box, down almost 40% on last season. This guy is the most expensive Premier League player of all time.
Yeah,
the third most expensive player in footballing history. And like you say, he will not properly influence Liverpool's squad or on-pitch success until the start of next season earliest, realistically. I don't really see them going deep in the Champions League. I don't think that, even if they do, I feel that Ekitike will be, I don't think they'd upset, if they manage to get to like the latter stages of the Champions League with Ekitike as their kind of number nine talisman, I don't see them upsetting that apple cart to fit Isak in. Certainly not as a starter. I think they're like, okay, you're a fantastic thing to have off the bench in a knockout tournament where we're like, fuck, we just need a goal in the next 25 minutes. Can you just go on and do something? That is the role that Isak will play if and when he comes back in the latter part of the season, if there's something still substantial to play for. But for the amount of money they've laid out and his performances on the pitch so far, also the fact that you have this squad build now where you're like, okay, what do we do? We can't play a back three because we don't have enough centre-backs. We have wing-backs that we're trying to play with full-back. We have Ekitike as a nine, but we also have Isak. How do we play them together? Because they're, you know, Ekitike started much better than a lot of people would have expected. Okay, but we also have the most expensive player in Premier League history sitting on the bench currently or potentially vying for minutes against Ekitike. We've got an aging superstar who's probably out the door. What do we do there? There's so many like unknowns with Liverpool and their squad makeup. Isak just coming in and not being that good is one that I guess a lot of people wouldn't have expected, and it's also just a really annoying one for them to have because he was so good or has historically been so good in the Premier League. They paid so much money for him. He is peak age. You have this season, next season, the season after at his like absolute undeniable peak years. He might, his curve might be a little bit slower in terms of a drop off, but guaranteed peak, 26, 27, 28, those are the years where historically that has been the maximal output for four players. Kind of similar to Isak's, that like 27, 28 is what their like maximum output tends to be at.
Yeah.
So you've already burned one of those seasons just by chance, or not by chance, but just by injury, circumstance, and just general like
signing two strikers.
Yeah. Right. At the same time, same window for a combined, what, like 215 mil, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah,
and like,
some crazy.
And also, other things as well. Like if, for example, they signed a real right back instead of Frimpong, I don't think you would be in the situation where you were having to change so much about the team to like they've had to change so much about the team to try and get the right back slot firmed up. If they hadn't had to do that, then it would be much simpler matter, you know, like if they had like just a good right, like say they had like, you know, I don't know, just an okay right back, a decent right back, then you wouldn't have to like try Szoboszlai there. You wouldn't have to like change the formation. So you're playing basically four central midfielders. And then it could have been a lot of the time like Ekitike playing off the left, Isak through the middle, Salah on the right, Wirtz at the 10 space, Szoboszlai plus one in midfield, Szoboszlai plus Gravenberch in midfield.
Yeah.
And then you're like, everything's fine.
Back four, yeah.
Everything's fine. Like, is it perfect? No, because you've still lost Trent, but it's fine. Whereas instead, because there are so many areas of the squad, like Kirkus has been terrible. The right back, I mean, he's been a little better lately, but I think he's been terrible. The right back slot's been a problem. And you've got two centre forward, like just nothing works there. Nothing has been working. You know, there are other factors. Like, I know McAllister hasn't been great, but whatever. It just feels like, weirdly for Liverpool, there was like no plan here. And so I think with Isak, I think Isak will obviously go on to be very good at Liverpool.
I agree.
It wouldn't even surprise me if he's like, well, he's probably not going to be Premier League top scorer, but like if he gets close in the next couple of seasons, I don't think it matters because I think that he now is going to have basically like 3 years of peak performance for Liverpool in exchange for £130 million and like nearly £300k a week. Like that, I just don't think he can pay that off. Like, unless they win like a couple of titles or a title in a Champions League, which is possible.
It's possible, yeah.
So like, I think at best this is in fine, but I'm leaning no. I'm leaning C tier. Like, that's where I'm going for this. Because I also think, and we'll come on to this in a minute, the Ekitike move makes this even worse.
Yeah, I agree. So I broadly agree with your banding there, but I just struggle a little bit. I'm in a difficult place with it based on the drop off from B to C. B being fine and C being no. I'm leaning towards no, but realistically, there isn't really a scenario where I wouldn't take Isak in my squad, even at 125 million points at 26 years old, not really seeing him play until 27.
Even if you needed at least two centre backs, even if you needed a proper right back.
I'm just like
see, I'm 100% like, if I've already bought Ekitike,
Ekitike was not a guarantee. Ekitike was a big
one. It doesn't matter. They paid guarantee money for him. If they didn't think he was... There's no point saying he's not a guarantee when you've paid £80 million for him.
But I think there are three players on this list that we're about to talk to who are all in the same scenario and have all had different experiences, all for around similar amounts of money at similar ages in similar like unproven situations.
But Ekitike is a development player and you're like, you don't sign Ekitike unless you're going to give him minutes because he's at the age where he needs those minutes. He's not 19. Like, so you know you're going to have to play him, but then you buy another guy who you have to play.
Yeah,
the whole thing is just like fucking stupid to me.
I agree with all of that, but also I still struggle to get past the point where it is, if Alexander Isak is available and willing, I struggle to not pull the trigger on that just because of how good he has been in the Premier League so far.
But I think if you asked Michael Edwards today,
sure,
you can like wave a magic wand and this Isak deal goes away and you get that money back, I think he would say, yep, okay.
I agree, but that's only, I think that's mainly because
because Ekitike.
Ekitike, and also because of all the other issues that have materialized in the squad this season as well.
But there's no point they didn't know Ekitike was going to be good because, like, firstly, they paid money as if he was going to be good. And also, they thought he was going to be good. Like, you don't sign a guy you don't think is going to... Like, it makes no sense to say, well, they didn't know Ekitike was going to be good. Like, they signed him thinking he was going to be good, and he has proved to be good, and they still did the Isak deal.
But I think they also thought
they've got so many squad holes. Like, they could have easily competed for the title this year if they'd done the right moves.
But I think they also just thought, however naively, that Van Dijk and Konaté were going to continue to be fantastic, that wing backs at fullback was going to work because they were just going to be so attacking, that Vieth was going to drop in at 10 and just start like absolutely cooking and creating like from nothing.
But it didn't
matter whether it was Ekitike or Isak, they were all going to get minutes and they were all going to score loads.
But those things all factor in the move.
I know, but I just think that they all thought it was going to work.
Well, yeah, I think they all thought it was going to work. But like, my point is that a move that doesn't work at 40 mil you can deal with. Even a move that doesn't work at 60 mil, like a lot of these teams can just about stomach. It's rough, but you can do it. One that doesn't work at 130 mil, and this is not to say he will never be good for them. I think he will be good for them, but he cannot. But you've got to look at it as like a team has finite resources. Each player is an allocation of some of those resources. They allocated a huge amount to Isak.
Kind of like the American cap system.
And what they are going to get back is not going to be worth it. Like, not only do they need to win those trophies, by the way, I think, to make it kind of worthwhile, but they need to win those trophies because they have Isak. It needs to be like, we would not have won this trophy if not for you. You know, if they win the league next year and like Ekitike scores 16 goals and Isak is also like pretty good, but they're basically splitting time up front, then I think we'll kind of be like, then I would still have a question mark because I'd say I don't know if they needed to do this in order to get that. Like, I think they could have done other stuff, in fact, like get a real right back rather than fucking playing thinking Jeremy Frimpong was going to be their right back, which I think was insane. And now they're like, oh my God, Connor Bradley's out for the season. It's like, Connor Bradley is not very good.
Northern Ireland's finest.
Let's hope not. Right.
Well, have you seen the quality of our squad over the past 15 years?
What do you think?
We idolised David Healy for 10 years.
Lafferty.
I agree with Michael.
Is Lafferty
Edwards
Northern Irish?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was.
I agree with the the thing about like Michael Edwards, if he could just like delete that deal from memory, he would. I disagree that it's solely down to just Isak. I think there are loads of other factors there that have happened that they didn't anticipate happening all at the same time.
I agree. But I do think that those are going to... But we're also rating like how it's gone, right? And how it's gone, I think, is like badly.
My ranking here is kind of like yours, B/C, fine/no, but I'm more on the fine end just because I think he will come good and he's such a good proven Premier League player that I struggle to like categorically say I do not want Isak in my squad. And I think that's why it's tipped into fine.
But that's not even the question. Like, I want Isak in my squad too. What I don't want is like a quarter billion hole in my finances in return for like 3 years out of what I hoped would be 4+, you know, at the top level. Like, that's the issue. Again, it's not that I don't think he'll come good, and it's not that I don't want him in the squad. I would love him in the squad. It's just not the situation. I mean, anyway, like a bunch of these, you know, we're going to pick up some of these topics again, but I think not having a plan for the player is part of the move. Like, you've got to, we will come back to that when a certain name comes up later on. Ekitike then, like this is the thing. I think Liverpool thought he was a great player. And we're like, yeah, he was, yeah, it's not sure. But Liverpool paid more for him than Arsenal paid for Gyökeres. Like, yes. I think...
About 20 mil.
I think they paid more for him in the end. I think they paid more, yeah, which is like also more than Newcastle paid for Voltimada.
And more than United paid for Šeško.
In the end, yeah, I think Šeško they were talking about.
Šeško like 75 with stuff maybe added on.
Yeah, that's a difficult one because they were saying, because like the whole thing was RB Leipzig were like, we want 90. Yeah. And then the deal got done. And I suspect that it's 75 with very easy add-ons. So to my mind for this, I mean, to be honest, it doesn't matter that much. Like all of these are very expensive.
I've
signings.
Got Voltimari down at 70, Ekitike at 80, and Šeško at 75 plus.
You've basically got a ton of guys in the middle here who were expensive. And then you've got Delap underneath who was cheap. And you've got Isak above who was like insanely expensive. Ekitike though, Liverpool thought he was going to be good. And he has been way better, I think, than... Well, I don't know. I
thought they thought he was going to be like decent. He had potential.
I think they thought he was going to be good. Because he was 23 as well. So it was an age where you'd be like, he might really kick on. And it's not like his production hasn't gone down. Like, his production has gone down from where it was in Germany. So I think that they'd say, well, this is like where we hoped he would be. We kind of look at his production in Germany and we multiply it by like 0.7 or whatever, you know, to get the kind of Bundesliga tax. And that's kind of where we are. Like, this is a guy, well, Isak, obviously it's a bit unfair to use the numbers like you say with Isak, but Isak is getting, you know, 2.5 shots a game. Ekitike is over 3. Ekitike is on 0.6 expected goals and assists per 90 minutes. Ekitike is also completing the same number of dribbles he did per 90 last season, 1.8, but at a much higher success rate than he did last season, which is really interesting. Like, he's landed in the Premier League and he's got better at ball carrying. That's really exciting. And if you look as well at chances he's creating off the dribble, there's a ton of them so far. He's creating chances off the dribble like a good winger. If he can do that consistently and get over 3 shots per 90, then you've got a potential world beater here. And actually something Liverpool haven't really had up front since, you know, the Suarez Sturridge days. Like, a guy who is just going to create his like chances for himself by beating a bunch of people. I mean, like, I guess that depends how you think of Salah. But like, he just looks amazing and he's 23 years old. I think he's been actually fantastic. Like, I mean, that signing has gone right at the top end of expectation.
Yeah.
I think this is slam dunk. Hands down, this is an S-tier signing.
I fully agree. This is the best signing of this bunch that we're going to talk about.
Yes, definitely.
Today. And agreed. I don't think there's a player that's close in this group
so far this season. No, I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, like, I figured he'd be decent and I was interested where he would go and I thought he would be a good signing for most, or basically any club, any big club in the Premier League. But he has been significantly better than I thought he would because his experience-wise, yes, he's 23. Yes, he can kick on, but he's coming out of, you know, his experiences in the two weakest leagues in Europe's top five. You know, he's got experience in the Bundesliga. He's got experience in Liga.
Sure.
Big, big jump to Premier League level at the age where you're expected to kick on as well. So many players before him have struggled to make that jump. So many players before him at that age have struggled to hit the ceiling that the people expected they would hit when they were 20. You know, they would see 20, 21-year-olds being like, oh, he'll be great when he's 24. So many players just aren't able to kick on quite as much as people expected.
Yeah.
I expected him to come, probably be good by next season and maybe very good by the season after that. He's come in and had an immediate impact, immediate starter. He's finishing at a very healthy rate, quite significantly above his XG. But even if he drops down to just finishing at the rate of his underlying numbers suggest, he would still be at like 0.46 expected goals per 90, which is super healthy for a 23-year-old who's straight out of the Bundesliga. No teething period, unlike a couple of players that we'll come on to in a minute. High shot, high box touch volume. He's getting on the ball in dangerous places. He's able to do something with it when he gets it. All are good signs for a good player. He's still 23. He could still be playing in the Premier League in 10 years. Like, this is a fantastic signing.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, who do you want to go to next?
Should we do... Right, I'll give you a pick of two. Should we do Šeško or Gyökeres?
Let's do Gyökeres. Okay, so he's got 5 Premier League goals. 2 of those are penalties.
Mm-hmm.
He has 5 XG and 1 XA. So you can argue there's no evidence that he's a bad finisher historically. So if he had 5 goals, 5 non-penalty goals, 1 assist... and 2 pens, it would look a bit more respectable. 0.4 expected goals and assists per 90 is not very good. It's not like absolute disaster territory, but it's certainly not good. Look, the thing is here, I think he's been bad. I think most people think he's been bad.
Uh-huh.
But I also wanted to look at the stuff that maybe problematizes that view, you know? Because I do think that there are ways he's helped Arsenal this season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to go round and round on this. But his pressing has been surprisingly good. And I do think that having a guy who's willing to run, not that he's always willing to run, but sometimes he's willing to run in behind, like it does help stretch the back line and it does make Arsenal better. And a lot of Arsenal's worst moments this season have been when he's gone off late in games. And then the team has got really deep. So you think about that Wolves game where Arsenal nearly dropped points at home against the bottom team in the league. He came off at 81 minutes, and the last 10 minutes, Wolves just pushed up and up and mm-hmm. up and up, and they almost stole a point. And I think it's difficult in a way to completely give Gyökeres credit for that, because yeah, I think that, you know, quite a lot that, well...
I mean, scenario effects.
But it was game effects in like the 75th minute, like, sure. And in the 81st minute. But for example, he's quite often, you know, taken off Gyökeres and brought on Gabriel Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And if instead of taking off Gyökeres for Jesus and leaving like Trossard on the wing, he brought on Martinelli for Trossard at the same time, then you would get the same effect of like having somebody stretch the back line. But I do think, you know, like you watch Jesus pressing late in games at the moment and you do see the benefit of having Gyökeres doing that. And if you look at how they've been this season with him playing, 24 games he's appeared in for Arsenal this season, 19 wins, 3 draws, 2 losses. Arsenal have scored about 2 goals per 90 with him on the field and allowed 0.42, which is like genuinely insane. And only Saliba in the Arsenal squad has a better what's called wowie, you know, with or without you, where it's like the team's performance without him versus with him. All right. You know, so Arsenal are good when Gyökeres plays is kind of the funny thing. And sure. Like... he looks bad, but the team is good. And from, you know, in a certain sense, I'm like, well, if the team is good, I kind of don't care.
Well, he's just martyring himself for the greater good.
Well, it's more that I just don't care, like,
yeah,
individually.
Or it's like, yeah, you care less.
It's the classic thing, isn't it? Where people are like, why isn't this striker scoring loads of goals? And you're like, well, is the attack scoring goals?
Yeah.
If the attack is scoring goals, like, who cares? All this said, I do think Havertz coming back will improve Arsenal quite a bit. I think Marino has been a better striker for Arsenal. Don't know what Jesus looks like once he's fit. I almost would be tempted to try Martinelli there if you wanted a line stretching centre forward. I think that he can do that. So that,
well,
that
play like Eze out left
or Trossard. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, or Madueke, like whoever, like whatever you want to do. But Martinelli, if what you want is for a guy to like get into the box, get shots, run in behind, Martinelli, I think, is really good at all that stuff. So this is the thing. Like, on the one hand, I think the performance with him has been pretty good. And Arsenal could win the league and they're like top of the league and top of the Champions League. Like, they could win either both of those trophies. Like that's totally possible. And so as a result, it's kind of hard to be like, oh, this is just like a total disaster, you know? However, he's on the books for years and he's just not good. He's just not good. And I also still think, you know, like, Arsenal have played at a higher level over the last few years when like Havertz has been up front or when Jesus has been up front, like they just have. So to me, I think this is a clear no. This is clear no territory.
Which is C? C-tier?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And like, I think a lot of people listening to this will be like thinking this is, oh God. And to be honest with you, like it's getting down towards that territory. The only thing is, if Arsenal win the league, it seems a bit weird to be like, well, this guy with whom they had like an insane win rate, he was a total bust. You know, like it's just like, oh my God, what a fucking disastrous signing, which hasn't affected them in any way. And they won the league. Like that's the one thing about it. So, but at the same time, I realize that I'm making an argument here, which is like, Gyökeres himself is crap, but the team's quality with him means that I can't totally like dog him for it.
Yeah, you're saying like,
you know,
it's like difficult. The tide raises all boats.
Yeah, basically. But also, but at the same time, it is difficult to say, isn't it? You're like, how do you gauge like how much of a
individual
part,
influence? Yeah.
Yeah. How much of a part of a having somebody like that, like has in like the team playing well and scoring goals.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really difficult to say. And again, you know, my point is when he goes off, the team does often look really bad, like really bad. And that I think I've kind of got to give him credit for. So like, that's the one thing that keeps me on the borderline, but I still think that this is I'm gonna go no.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go no, but like but oh God is like very close. D is right there.
Yeah, like we both had our reservations when it happened in the summer, and it's kind of played out exactly how I anticipated it would. There was huge fanfare when he arrived, scored like almost 40 league goals that season, almost 70 league goals across his last two seasons at Sporting. And I was always concerned about how that would translate from Portugal to the Premier League. And I didn't think it would translate massively well. Certainly nowhere near the same volume. But a lot of people just seem to think he would come in bag loads. And it just hasn't worked out that way. It's worked out the exact way that I thought it would. He's had low goals, low XG, low shots on target percentage. He costs £60 million. He's 27 years old.
The shots worries me more than anything else. Like, because he gets tons of touches in the box.
Yes, yeah, so like, he's like six touches in the box, but like two shots and only 30% of them are on target.
Yeah, which is like, again, the thing, right? It's like this guy needs, he takes a couple of touches to steady himself and he can't do it.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't do it, then like he's just fucked and he gets closed down. Like that's basically it.
Yeah. And I think in Portugal, you get away with a lot of that because you just potentially have more space. Your size and strength gets you further. It hides a multitude of sins. Premier League, everybody's that or better or faster or stronger. You just do not have that leeway. And we're seeing that with Gyökeres and £60 million, 27 years old. This is him. Like, this is the finished product of a player. If he can't do it in the Premier League in the next 12 months, he's not going to get any better, which is concerning. So,
agreed.
This is his first season in a new club, in a new league. I think even at this age, there is a little bit of grace there. And like you say, Arsenal have looked decent or good as a collective with him. If he doesn't come good next season, I think this is an absolute bust. But at the minute, I've put him at C tier. No.
Oh, and I think that, you know, Jesus is going to go in the summer, right?
Sure.
Like, Jesus is going to be kind of out in the summer, I think, just because of where he is in his career. What Arsenal choose to do then will be very interesting. Like, if Havertz comes back and is great and fit the rest of the season, then I don't know how that affects things. But, like, Arsenal potentially do have a forward vacancy at the end of the season. And if they decide to use that and go for another striker, then, yeah, I'm kind of like, that's pretty much the end of Gyökeres. Whereas if they say, you know what, this is fine and we'll go again with this group, then maybe he gets another shot. And you know, to be fair to him, like the team, I don't think like really does play to his strengths very well. You know, I think we've all kind of seen this, that everybody loves to clip the moments where he doesn't make the run that they want him to make.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's like, there are lots of moments where you see him make the run and the pass doesn't get played
because
Arsenal have just simply not played that way for a long time.
I mean, he's on 200k a week until 2030.
Yeah, it's not good.
No.
It's a very bad situation. But I also think like, if Arsenal win the league, they're just like, we don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
like,
I fully agree.
We just don't give a fuck. So like on a player level, like I think it's been oh God, but I think
I just think this is like a told you so moment. Like we all saw this coming, and it's kind of like told you so.
But I also think that Arsenal, it wasn't like Arsenal didn't think this was possible at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think they knew this was a possibility. I just think they looked at the options and they were like, what are we going to do here? Like, yeah, in hindsight, we say they should have gone for Ekitike. But at the same time, like, Ekitike, we were also like, can Ekitike, like, can he go up against Premier League defenders?
Yeah.
Can he find space in the box when he's not playing in transition, like the way that he has done, like, his whole career up till now? Like,
I think also, can a 23-year-old coming out of France and Germany cut it in the Premier League enough for us to win this season, to win now, with nobody like as our preeminent number nine? I think with Gyökeres, just because he was older, more developed, and was so prolific in Portugal, I think they thought that it was a greater chance that Gyökeres would land on his feet quicker.
Which I think was reasonable enough.
I think it's reasonable enough.
Like, I mean, like, Isak aside, like, it's just really hard to say, like, what should Arsenal have done?
Yeah.
And in hindsight, like, I mean, that would have also been another thing. Like, if Arsenal had said, fuck it, like, we believe that Isak is, if they'd had the same belief as Liverpool that, like, Isak will be available and they'd devoted themselves to unsettling him all summer, then maybe, like, maybe they could have got him. Like, I don't know, Liverpool just won the title, but maybe, you know, with Ekitike going there, like, and who knows, it's often a case of the managers talking to the player and stuff, but like, maybe, like, that's the one player here that you look at and you say that's the missed opportunity for them.
He was over twice the price.
Sure. No, I'm not saying that it's like easy. I'm just saying that, like, when we're like, oh look, they took a gamble and it didn't work out, it's like, who among these guys was not a gamble?
What could have been plan B? What could it have been, basically?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, well, given that you offered Šeško or him, do you want to go on to Šeško?
Yeah, we can do Šeško. I think, for me, this is kind of similar to banding issue with Isak, and that it no kind of feels harsh because I think there are positives, but it also might just be a no. He was a lot of money, 75 million quid, 22 years old. So big outlay for... And big risk, I guess, for a guy who's unproven, but
all these fees are so crazy.
They are.
Like, given how negative we are basically about most of these, like, it's crazy how big all these fees are.
Yeah, and he's the youngest on this list, but not by much. Like, he's not much younger than Ekitike, and he's not much younger than Voltamade. So I think, Isak, Gyökeres are kind of in their own category there in terms of, like, age development. They are at that kind of career curve. Voltamade, Ekitike, Šeško are like buying in that early career period where they're just about ready to explode into the player that you expect them to be. And that's why you're seeing £75 million, £80 million, clubs taking the risk on buying the player they will be at 25 versus the player they are now. Yeah. With Šeško, this is a big risk. And what we've seen so far this season does raise some concerns, even though there are some positives. He's got 5 goal involvements in total in 11 and a half 90s, 4 goals, 1 assist. But that was 2 goals in 10 and a half 90s until earlier this week when he scored 2 against Burnley. So before the start of, last week it would have been, he would have had 2 goals, 1 assist in over 10 90s, which is pretty underwhelming, especially considering you spent £75 million on him and United's XG is like the third highest in the league, maybe. So you have a striker who has played a fair amount and has had decent chances and decent volume and just hasn't been converting. He's 0.43 non-penalty expected goals per 90, finishing at 0.3. That will have actually jumped, though, because he scored 2 in one game. Getting over 3 shots per 90, which is highest of any of these players we're considering today. Mm-hmm. And 1.5 of those shots are on target, which is almost double second place, which is Ekitike. But none of these are going in. So I think there are positives in that he's doing the things you expect forwards to do. He's getting touches in the box. He's not getting a massive amount of touches, but it's still almost 5 good touches in the box. He's converting them into shots at the best rate of anybody on this list, as well as converting them into shots on target as the best rate of anybody on this list. But the conversion's just been lacking. So I think he's basically doing a lot of things right without actually any substantial end product. And when you watch him play, like, his movement, I have questions about it. I think he's often getting on...
Yeah.
He often gets on the ball in the box, but in non-dangerous positions. Like, he leads quite high, leads wide. He's basically standing on the, like, goal line as it meets, like, where the box meets the goal line, basically.
He looks like a guy who's used to playing, like, in a front two.
But it's just, know? Like, the positions he gets the ball in are like, oh, okay, like, that's a weird position for a 9 to really want the ball and to receive the ball. It's not very dangerous. If I was a centre back, I'd be very happy for you to get the ball there versus on the edge of the 6-yard box and around the penalty spot. His movement has, I have questions. And I think with age, that hopefully develops, with good coaching, that develops. What is good, though, is when he does get the ball in those positions, he is able to, like, wiggle his way around the box to manufacture a chance for himself, manufacture enough space for himself to get something off. I just am unsure whether he will develop into the player that everybody kind of thought he would be in the summer. Because, like you said, Leipzig were looking like upwards of, you know, 85-90 million quid for him. And there could be some substantial, or, you know, it could be fair to say that there are some another 10 plus million pounds in add-ons that people haven't really considered yet. So this could be an 85 million pound signing.
Sure.
I think he's been underwhelming, to say the least. I think there are positives. I think there are things that he can work on and can be refined, but also when you compare him to the likes of Voltamade, especially Ekitike, similar price, similar age, big Premier League clubs, all coming out from outside the Premier League, unproven, he's just struggled, and I'm just not sure that he's necessarily the guy that we once thought he was in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of like leaning, I was like, is this going to be an oh god?
Oh, were you going that far?
And then when I looked into it, I was just like, no, it's not that bad.
Sure.
You know, the goal involvements, it's like, yeah, like he's up to 5, but a couple of those against Burnley, like very recently.
Last week, yeah.
And a lot of the XG ticked up then. But then also, I think that if you look at his recent performances,
they've been better.
Last 4 games, it's like 5 shots, 8 shots, 3 shots, 6 shots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, touches in the box have also been high the last few games.
We also did play Burnley and Wolves in 2 of those games.
But those are Premier League teams. Like, and I know the Wolves are going to go down, but Wolves are not a joke. Like, Wolves went to the Emirates and were pretty good. They went to Anfield and were pretty good. Like, I think Wolves are considerably better than Burnley.
But both will be in the championship next year.
But even still, like, going up against those teams that are, like, you know, that are going to sit a bit deeper against you and being able to get space, getting touches in the box and shots off, like, that's what he's going to need to do.
Mm.
Like, if he's going to play for Man United, like, that's like a reasonable, I guess, like yardstick for how good a striker he can be for Manchester United. So and also there's like Leeds are not a pushover. Brighton are not a pushover. Issues here, like defensively, he's kind of like a total zero.
Sure.
Like he's not giving anything. And also it's just kind of fucked because like you signed a development striker at a club that has no plan. And then you sat the coach. So the next guy might come in and be like, I love Šeško and I can work with him and I really see a player here. But often new managers arrive and they say, I want a fucking new striker. And if they say that, I just don't know what United do. Like they're a bit stuck with him. Like, do they have a plan for how to maximize him? Don't know. Like from a club perspective, I do think it is a bit of an oh god because he spent a fortune on him. I think United also look better often when he's not on the pitch. And actually the kind of with or without you backs that up. Like United are slightly worse when he's not on the pitch, when he's on the pitch. However, if those recent performances, I want to watch another few weeks and see what happens there.
I agree.
And if the next guy comes in and likes him, then again, like I say, it's all fine. But I expect it to be kind of in oh god territory, and in the end, I'm just in no territory. I think it's just no. But like,
yeah,
it's not.
I think there are too many positives to be on
gold. It's not as disastrous as I thought. Yeah,
and he does have pace. He does have size, which just helps in the Premier League. He's shown ability. He's shown glimpses of Premier League quality.
Yeah,
it's like particularly over Christmas. Enough for me to say, okay, there could be a player in this. I'm just not certain. And equal, similar to the Isak Edwards comment you made, if I could delete this transfer, would I? Yeah, probably. At this stage.
Yeah, exactly.
I probably would.
We're getting a bit late here. So we've got to get into our next ones. I think we've got Voltamada and we've got the Chelsea boys. I'm going to do the Chelsea boys really quickly.
Sure.
They cost 100 million combined. João Pedro has 9 goal involvements in 1,500 minutes. 3 of those in a 1-5-1 win over West Ham. So, you know, that's not... How much stock do you put in there? But 0.55 expected goals and assists per 90, surprisingly decent. At the same time, when I say they cost a combined 100 mil, 2/3 of that went on Pedro.
Yeah.
And he's at 1.8 shots per 90. There's no dribbling value out of him. Like, in fact, Delap is actually much better at getting shots and getting touches in the box. You know, Delap is over 3 shots a game with respectable quality. So I look at João Pedro and I'm like, this is a no. Like, even though he's got 9 goal involvements, like, I know that seems really harsh. And I was like, can I put him in no there? But again, I'm just like, you can use this money for something else. And with Delap, I actually have Delap in fine.
Ooh, interesting. I'm the opposite.
Because one, Delap is very young. Yeah, I thought you might be. One, Delap is very young. 2, he's homegrown. 3, he is getting box touches and shots at a higher rate than Pedro. Like, Pedro is a better player.
Yeah.
But Delap as like, but Delap as a potential striker for Chelsea, it's possible he could improve into that. Pedro is not going to be Chelsea's striker. He just isn't.
Like, but he has the versatility to just be like a very, very useful cog in a wider system.
Okay, but that's 60 mil and that's...
I don't think 60 mil is that much in the current market.
It is when you're a team that is not close to competing for anything. Like, if you pay 60 mil for a player who can fill a bunch of attacking roles for you and you're like Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City, like Man City have just done that with Semenyo, Arsenal did it with Eze, then you're like, sure, like, you need those holes filled. Chelsea are not in that position. Chelsea have been like, they've got a goalkeeper who I still don't trust. They've got almost no depth in midfield. They're still doing stuff like, you know, like Achampong is playing right back against Arsenal tonight. I love that guy. He is a highly rated young centre back. He's playing right back. But with Delap, I think their whole idea with Delap was, we will pay a price for him, which means that we get a bargain if he sparks and he's great.
Sure.
And if he doesn't, we don't lose money. We'll be able to flip him for about the same amount. And it's about £33 million, right? It was something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it was cheap.
Yeah, yeah. They can flip him for that, I think.
For a 22-year-old as well.
Yeah, they can totally flip him for that if he doesn't work out, which he probably won't, but that's fine. And I still don't think it's like a total certainty. Like, both these guys are going to get replaced by Emeka, like, when he arrives in the summer. And sure, probably by Panichelli the year after that. But I think Delap is exactly what they hoped he would be, you know?
I mean, he's barely played.
Not what they hoped he would be. Maybe that's wrong.
He's played like 550 minutes in the league.
He's not what they hoped he would be, but he was one of the possibilities they had in mind.
I think they hoped that Lightning would strike twice, in that they would get the same thing as a former City castaway and they would be able to turn him into Cole Palmer, or he would just hit like Cole Palmer.
Well, yeah, everyone hopes that, but I think they were more like, this is a 30 mil gamble, which costs us nothing, probably.
You know, that's what I mean. I think that's, they're like, okay, we 30 million is not much, and he's so young. We'll take the gamble, and if it doesn't work out, we'll recoup some money from him. We'll probably lose like a maximum of 5-10 mil, worst case scenario.
Yeah,
because he's so young. But I also put him in the O God tier, just because I wanted to put somebody in the O God tier, and I just never liked the signing. I think he's the most expendable. He's the least interesting. He's played the least minutes bar Isak.
But he's just not expensive, and he's homegrown and young.
Yeah, I mean, didn't love it. Significant underperformance so far this season as well. He's at like 0.4 non-penalty expected goals, but 0.15 actual goals.
Yeah, but like, there's no evidence across his career he's a bad finisher.
I mean, I just think he's a real sauceless player that I don't really like. And I'm just not convinced he's a top 6 striker. Like you say, he's going to be replaced in the next 2 years.
I'm not convinced of that either, but I think it's not a disaster if he isn't. Whereas I think it is a disaster if like Gyökeres isn't.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
isn't.
The money they're spending on Delap is not substantial. I guess contract is long, 6 years, and he's on like 100k a week. I don't like that.
Don't love that.
And even his good season, quote unquote, last season, he was only at like 0.3 expected goals per 90. Compare that to the players who like...
Yeah, he's paying for like a dog Ipswich shit team.
Yeah, but still, like, but people looked at Chelsea fans looked at Nico Jackson last year and were like, he's frustrating, isn't he? He's frustrating. He was averaging over 0.5 expected goals per 90 last season.
But, well, look, everybody at Chelsea, including fans, who, like, all the people who are negative about Nico Jackson, like, will they apologise for their stupidity? Will they fuck? But they should. They're all fucking idiots. However, I just don't think this one costs them that much. Like, Pedro, I think, is like 60 mil they could have used to do something proper with.
So I guess even though we're flipped on the tier, we have a B, well, B and a C, we have a B and a C essentially flipped either way. Average is like a low B, high C. Like on the brink of yes or no.
Okay, so we got one more to do here, Valtomada. So this is an interesting one because it does look good on the surface, right? six mm-hmm. goals, two assists, 14 90s, a bit over like 6.4 expected goals and assists, like totally fine. There's 0.5, he's just under 0.5 non-penalty expected goals and assists per 90. So that's just all right.
Newcastle struggled to create as well, though.
Newcastle fans are really delighted with him. And I don't object to that because I do think he looks good. But the bear case for him, the bear case, you know, so the case against him, he's at 1.9 shots per 90. And maybe that never goes up because you were like, Newcastle like have trouble creating. Yeah, but they have no creators.
Yeah, they're 10th for XG.
So, in the league. So like, that might just be what happens. You know, like that might be where they are. Like, if he can't create his own shots, maybe that just doesn't improve. And then his little run of headed goals comes to an end, and you have a mediocre striker who costs you 75 mil. Like, that's completely plausible. Like, so that's the bear case. The bull case is that he's currently putting up lower expected assists than he has at any point during his career. And, you know, Gordon has only played about half the minutes this season. You know, Visser obviously wasn't around a lot, and Hall has only played about half the minutes. So there's like a key progressive passer out and a guy who you'd expect to be one of his key like attacking partners.
And they've been unlucky as well as a team overall. I think performance wise, they're like, if you look, they're actually diff per 90 where they should be.
But he hasn't been. Like
I still think it factors in the like the whole
how?
Team scenario in that they've been unfortunate in games that they probably should have won had they played like the underlying numbers.
Yeah, but I don't think that Voldemort is above his own underlying numbers. So it seems a bit weird to be like, well, maybe he'd be better off if they hadn't underperformed their numbers when he has overperformed his numbers. I just think that like they've not been at the races all season. I think there are tactical issues there. Like there's loads of space between the lines, needs to be tightened up. Yeah, I think that getting like a proper first 11 kind of back fit would be really great. But I think this one is like good signing. Great signing. This is an A.
I put this as an A, yeah.
But I do think it's closer to B.
I just didn't want to put everybody
Newcastle
in B.
Fans. I think it's close. Yeah, I just think it's closer to B than a lot of people think. I think a lot of people would have this in just like great signing. And my worry is, 1.9 shots per 90. Like again, my issue with Newcastle is the same as it was before, which is like if they go and get a more creative player to supplement this team and everyone's fit, then great. We're all good.
Yeah.
If they don't do those things, then it's not great. And Voltimada's shots will probably never tick up.
His
and
shot
like,
quality is very high, though. He's at 0.2 non-expected goals per shot.
So?
If you take less shots, you want them shots to be better.
I'd much rather more shots. No, really.
Sure. Like,
Newcastle had like very low shot numbers, but really high quality shots last season as well. Like that is the way it works for them, basically. They create chances when they're able to run in behind, and then those chances are big.
I think like, if you're a striker who has low shot numbers, like you, the minimum expectation for you to be a decent striker is that the shots are very, very good.
No, but I just don't think you'll ever will be a decent striker if you have low shot numbers. Like if you have 1.9 shots per 90, like the simple fact is, I just don't think you will ever be a great striker. Like that is it. Like you need more shots than that. It doesn't matter how good those shots are. Because sometimes you're going to be facing like deeper blocks or whatever, and you just simply will not get those shots. Like, but the thing is about him getting few shots but high value ones is that those are the shots Newcastle were getting last season without him.
Mm.
You know, admittedly when they had Isak, but those are shots they get even when he's not there. Like Visser could get those shots, and what they need from their striker is either for him to get them shots that they can't get without him in the team, or they need for him to be able to create shots for other people. Because there's no creator in the side.
Sure.
So those are the things they need for him. Those are the options. There are lots of avenues for him to be like really good for them. Mm-hmm. But my point is only that he's got to like take one of those avenues. He can't just like be this. He needs to be better than this.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's a good signing given that Newcastle are adapting to like a post-Isak world. And the whole narrative around the signing as well. That like obviously Isak left, one of the best strikers in the league. They missed on multiple of his like top line replacements. Ekotike they were in for, Sesko they were in for. Were they in for Gyökeres? I can't remember.
No, I don't think so.
But they were linked to like some of the players that went for big money to other teams. Other guys who like Sesko have not landed the way that say United would have liked. For him to be the plan B for similar amounts of money and to have had a better start of the season at a similar age to Ekotike and Sesko. Obviously not a better start to the season than Ekotike, but a better start to the season than probably everybody else on this list. I think this is an unexpectedly good signing. So without the handicap of that, it would be a B, but with the handicap, it's an A for me.
Okay, fine. All right, well, let's get into the burn book, man. Right, the burn book time. What are you putting in the burn book?
In the burn book. What I'm putting in the burn book this week is nursery.
Yeah.
I hate it. So Bonnie started nursery this week, like properly this week. Yesterday and today were her first like proper, theoretically full days. And Jess and I have both agreed that we absolutely hate the whole concept and the experience of it. The nursery staff are lovely. The nursery is a very nice nursery. It's all very good. They're all lovely and amazing. But I fucking hate it. Like, what we're hating is the fact we're having to hand our child over to them for what will end up being like 9-10 hours a day, when like full day. Like, when we're both in the office, we will hand her off at like half eight, and we will pick her up pretty close to six.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a long, long time. For the last 11 months, she's maybe spent a handful of afternoons without either one of us, to then go from that to like, oh shit, yeah, full days with just like essentially strangers. And it's been like a real reality shock so far this week. And for both of us in different ways, because I've been used to being away from Bonnie for a long time because I go to the office, I've been working full time since she was 6 weeks old. Whereas Jess has basically spent most every minute of every day with her for her entire life.
Yeah,
obviously, like, she's gone out with her friends, she's gone out for lunches and stuff without her. But generally speaking, the longest window she would have not seen her would be 4 or 5 hours, whereas now we're expected to be doing that 8 hours, 5 days a week. So that's a real shock to the system. And for me, the biggest issue is that I just don't like not being in control. Like, you're just relinquishing all control for her well-being to somebody else. And one, these are strangers, but I even have that problem with, like, my mum and Jess's parents, which is like, that's a full me thing. And obviously I don't like interfere with them because I trust them all. They've raised multiple children. Like, it's all fine. She's safe and she's cared for. But I just still don't like not being involved or knowing. And it's not either me or Jess as the primary caregiver in any given scenario. So I'm struggling to kind of come to terms with that. And yeah, and like, Bonnie's still adapting to it as well. New environment, new people, new schedule. This was her like settling in week. Oh no, sorry. Last week was her settling in week. She kind of fooled us. Last week was her settling in week. She went to her grandparents for like an afternoon or morning and afternoon on the Monday. I dropped her off, plopped her down on the carpet with some toys, couldn't care less, walked away. Like, she was completely oblivious to everything. She loved it. She was fine. Jess went and picked her up in the afternoon. She was absolutely fine. She went in for an hour to the nursery the next day with Jess, fine. She then came back 2 days later for 2 hours on her own, completely fine. So we were like, oh, okay, good first week. Like, this is going well. Then this Monday came, dropped her off at her grandparents again. Immediate screams, tears. I was like, okay. She settled after 20 minutes and was fine until the afternoon when Jess got her. And then the Tuesday was the first day, that was yesterday, first full day in nursery. Jess dropped her off and she just cried and cried.
Bonnie.
And then I think she settled herself, but Jess got a call at like 12:30 saying, she's not eaten or slept. Can you maybe want to come and pick her up? So Jess went and picked her up. And then today, same, immediate tears on handoff. And I think it was probably a bit grisly in the morning, but she actually stayed there until 4 today, which is good. Had 2 naps. Didn't eat that much, but she's really adapting.
No.
And it's so funny to see, well, I mean, not funny, devastating, to see the impact it's having on her as well, because her separation anxiety has gone through the roof. She had separation anxiety when she was really, really young, but it's been fine for months. Now she's rejecting me as well. It used to be like Jess and I were the two pillars. It didn't matter what anything happened. Like, we were like the complete safe space. Now it's just Jess. Even if I'm holding her and she sees Jess, she'll start crying. So she's just like all out of sorts. He is kind of trying to figure out what separation is and this whole new environment where she's going to be for like majority of all weekdays. And then to add on to the top of that, we're paying lots of money for the experience.
Yeah.
And I guess once she gets older, I'll be very, very comfortable with paying people money to take care of my children. In fact, I'll probably encourage it. But right now, in week one, or I guess week two, if you count settling in weeks, paying a lot of money to not be with your child and just to have strangers care for them is unsettling and strange. And I don't like it.
No, I agree, man. It is heartbreaking. And like, unlike school, school's easier because, you know, Coco basically is struggling with going back to school after Christmas, you know, like 3 weeks off over Christmas.
Sure.
But with school, you're like, we don't have a choice. You have to go to school.
Yeah.
If you don't go to school, I go to prison. Like, that's how it works, you know? And so that does kind of help emotionally. Whereas, you know, with nursery...
the threat of incarceration.
Yeah. Whereas with nursery, you're kind of like, well...
It's an
okay,
option, yeah.
You know, or you'll finish your work for the day at kind of, you know, 2:30 and you're like, well, I could just go in and pick her up. Like, why don't I go and pick her up, you know, and look after her all day, you know?
Yeah.
As there is always that thought. But then you're like, but we paid a fucking fortune for nursery and like she's got her meals there and like, you know, yeah. All that kind of stuff. That,
and a
all
routine those things... and like you don't want to, yeah.
Yeah. And also I've got two kids. Like, you know, when it's a Friday afternoon or something, you're like, we're about to spend the whole weekend together. I don't want to go into it kind of tired and pissed off, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So, but it is awful. And then obviously, you know, you have the apps where they send you pictures of your kid. And some days you look at your kid and you're like, they just look sad. Or sometimes even it feels like they're being brave and kind of putting a brave face on it. And that is just awful. So I completely know where it is. And yeah, like you say, yeah. you pay like mortgage level money for the privilege of this. Like there was a point with Coco and Goldie when Coco, you know, they're both getting subsidized hours, but we were still paying between them £3,500 a month.
That's outrageous. Ours is considerably cheaper than that. Like we've got a cheap one by compare, like on the cheaper end of the spectrum.
Sure.
Just I guess we just got a bit lucky with it because there's other ones around us that would have been like over double the price. We just got a space in one that happens to be much more reasonably priced. But still, the fact that we're on a cheap one and it's like without this, with it, if it wasn't subsidized ours, it would be like £1,400-£1,500 a month. Without the entire bill that they're charging us plus the government top up is like £1,400-£1,500 a month. And that's the cheap end of it.
Yeah,
which is crazy. Like the whole concept, the money's insane.
And you're like, how do people do this?
Yeah,
you know, how do people do this? Okay, I completely agree with this. Mine's a quick one. We all been talking about this forever, but like, I know that like inshittification is like such a big thing. Like this idea of
inshittification.
Yeah, you know, you're not really online enough, P, for something who like works.
is this the Gen Z's?
No, it's just the idea that like everything is getting like slowly shittier and shittier, like especially like online.
I'm an eternal pessimist, so I'm right there with him.
Sure, but part of it is like the intentional inshittification of things. And I do think with technology, like sometimes it does feel like we've peaked and gone downhill, you know? It's like when Concorde stopped operating. You know, you're like, okay, so now we can't take the fastest route to New York.
Yeah, sure. You know,
there were people in human history who got to New York faster than we did. Like, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, similarly with this, I was like, there are people, the generation below us, who probably don't remember what it was like to go to a website and for the website to just start functioning, not for you to wait while nothing's happening for the shitty things to load that are like, do you accept this? Do you accept that?
Cookies,
you know, like all this fucking shit.
Right.
Yeah. And also then there's always an advertising thing, isn't there? That's just like, join our mailing list. I'm like, fuck off. Like there's that comes up. Another example would be like Uber. There was a time when Uber was like relatively cheap. And when you clicked for an Uber, you would get assigned an Uber. And now it takes much longer because I know there was a thing going around about this recently as well, but basically it seems that like their premium service, you know, where you get like an Uber faster, the way they do this is not to get you an Uber faster on the premium service, it's to delay the other service. And if you order an Uber, you will stand there for 5 minutes before it even like gets close to connecting someone.
Also, like they start showing the drivers where the destination is, which they didn't used to do back in the day, which means that especially if you're in central, trying to get somewhere that is not central. It's such a pain because you'll just be spinning for like 20 minutes and people will see it, reject it.
Well, that in fairness with that, I'm like, okay, like I don't mind the drivers having some control over like the fares they take, like having transparency there. I'm kind of like, okay, you know, whatever. But the other stuff where I'm just like, you're taking so long to even accept my order. Like, so Uber's another example of it. Another thing is like, you know, obviously in the UK, you can't just watch Premier League TV. It's simply not allowed half the time. But in order to watch like TV, football on TV, you need like TNT Sports so that you can watch the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And you need Sky or you need Now TV to watch a load of Premier League games, blah, blah, blah. The Now TV app, like I use it now to watch football. And I will close it on my laptop and I will then go to like put it on the TV. and it will say you can't do this because like you're currently watching on another
device.
Would you like to upgrade? Because then you can watch. Then you can watch on more devices. And I'm like, but I'm not watching on another device because I closed that window and my laptop is closed. But it feels like they've intentionally delayed the app's kind of like recognition of that in order to like kind of get you in the zone where you're like, maybe I upgrade.
Reinvent you into upgrading.
YouTube as well. YouTube. There was a, like, you used to just be able to go on YouTube and watch videos. And now it's just like, no, like, we're going to show you 100 adverts. It's going to be fucking unwatchable. And then we're going to like make you, and because what we want is for you to like subscribe to our premium service, because we know that you are trying to show your child an episode of fucking Bing or something. And we know that the 2 minutes that you have to sit there watching adverts is going to potentially make your child have a meltdown. Yeah. So there's all this stuff where I'm just like, we're just getting fucked. We're just getting fucked left and right. I mean, the all the cookie acceptance stuff is maybe the most annoying example, because that was a government decision and that was clearly done by a generation of people who basically don't go online. Like, they go on their email and they just simply don't go on normal websites. So they were like, yeah, I think that websites should operate that way. And they don't realize that it's made the internet like absolutely fucking unusable.
I also hate the streaming services that just added adverts, like mid-roll adverts and shows, despite you still paying for the product.
Yeah,
like they just made the non-advert product more expensive. They just added an extra tier. Spend £3 more a month and you don't get ads, but you're already spending.
They said what you've been paying this whole time, we are now going to give you a worse service for that same
exactly.
money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, that's it. So like, you go on Amazon Prime and it's just like, now we've put some ads in here, and I'm like, but I'm still paying the same amount of money. In fact, I'm paying more than I started. Doesn't matter. So all this stuff,
like,
I'm just like,
no, they're like all 10 minimum.
Yeah, all this stuff just getting fucked relentlessly. Don't like it. Bullshit. I'm going to go on to what I'm taking out of the burn book. So I'm trying to do some more stuff.
Okay.
You know, basically, Vig. I don't think I'm very good at enjoying my life, Pete.
this is taking a turn.
And I think that sometimes as well, like, you get into a routine and you're like, well, I really want to, like, you know, watch a film at home or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff is good. But I read a study recently that was like talking about this, and it was like, well, we actually remember things better, including the emotions associated with those things, when they are outside our normal experience. And that stands to reason, right? You know, like, you watching a film at home is not as memorable as you going to the cinema. But as a result, I was like, oh, okay, so maybe I will be better at remembering that I had a nice day that day if I try and do something that's a little bit, that's not just the same shit I always do.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than watch a film at home, I'll go to the cinema. And I've been doing that more and more because I was just like, hang on, I can go to the cinema in the day. Like, I suddenly realized that last year. But I went to the theater with my sisters-in-law and Coco at the weekend. We saw the Paddington musical. That was good. Last week, I was like, I'm going to go and see fucking Marty Supreme at the Curzon in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And I arrived. This is an 11 a.m. showing. I arrived. I've been to the dentist. And then I arrived, like, for the 11 a.m. showing. And the guy said, sit wherever you want. There's no one else in there. And I went in and there was not a soul.
It was just you.
No one. Not a single person entered. It was just me. So I went to the middle row. I went to the middle seat. I sat and watched Marty Supreme. You know what? Halfway through, I was like, wonder what time it is. Got my phone out, checked. Didn't matter. No one else was there.
Yeah.
Like, I had, they give you popcorn in a bag there because I think, you know, like, because it's the middle of the day, it's just like, I guess, more cost effective for them than like making a bunch of popcorn that just sits there all day.
They don't have it in the, it's like prepackaged.
Maybe they do like in the evening, but in the day, certainly they have prepackaged. But I was like, normally I would feel bad about the rustling this is making. Don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
No one's here. Doesn't matter. Like, had my coat on one chair, had my bag on another chair, had my snacks on a third chair. Didn't matter. And I just sat there in the middle of the thing. I like had a great fucking time. Not a single soul in there, Pete. I was genuinely like, I'm watching Marty Supreme in the cinema by myself. This is unreal.
I imagine they just wouldn't have played it if nobody... Like, they obviously just wouldn't have played it if you hadn't turned up.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I think they might do, just because, like, the cinema's there. There's a guy who's employed to be there. And I think that if, on the off chance somebody arrives half an hour in, sure, and they're like, I want to go in, you kind of can't be like, well, now we'll go and start it and scrub through to the right point. Like, I think it's just like, yeah, if the cinema's there, they just put it on, especially because there's not a real projectionist anymore. But that was pretty great. And like, I had a great experience. Also, Marty Supreme's really fucking good. But I'm going to go to the theater by myself in April because there was a play that I wanted to see. And Emma and I were like, we're already relying on quite a lot of favors to, you know, to go away. We're going to go to Paris in May. This kind of shit. We go to a wedding in June. So do we want to use up a favor, sure, for this evening? And and Emma was like, just go by yourself. And I was like, great. There are loads of like single seats in really good spots.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, front row of the circle. Great seat. I'll go by myself.
What are you going to
see? So I'm going to, John Proctor is the villain.
Okay.
Because I was like, I love The Crucible. It's got really good reviews. Like, I don't think the Broadway cast is transferring. Because I know Sadie Sink from Stranger Things, like she was in it, and I know she got nominated for a Tony. Mm. I don't think she won. But anyway, like, it was really well received. And I was like, great, I would love to go and see this. So I'm going to go and see that. So I'm trying to do a bit more shit. And like, I'm looking forward to getting my hand back so that I can be like, right, okay, today, instead of going to the gym, I'm going to go bouldering or whatever. And just try and do a bit more shit this year, because I decided to earn less money,
mm-hmm,
you know, with my job. I was like, I decided to take on fewer therapy clients. I decided to, like, you know, not to spend a couple of days a week doing another like office job on top of what I'm doing. Like, I decided to do all that stuff
in order to gain time. Yeah.
So I could be around with my kids. There's only one morning a week that I don't go and drop off both my children. I'm around like every day after school. Yeah. Like, it's great. But I don't take advantage of that for myself. And so I was like, I need to start doing that. So that's my plan as well. So that's why I'm taking out of the burn book, doing shit. and even stuff with Emma, you know, like in the evening with Emma, like we will sit and watch something and it's great. I like doing that. I like watching a film with her or TV with her. It's great. But recently I was just like, why don't we just get like a fucking puzzle and do that in the evening and sit, and then we can talk. And, you know, she's at a point with her book where she was kind of like, oh, I do want to talk about this because, you know, there are a couple of things I'm stuck on, mm-hmm, approaching the end of this draft. So that was nice as well. I was like, that's just a change from the usual, where I didn't just sit there and watch an episode of whatever, which if you asked me in 3 weeks' time, what did you do on that evening? I'd be like, I could not tell you what episode we watched. We watched the next episode of whatever.
Yeah,
we're
it watching. All goes into blur.
Whereas sitting there and talking to Emma about her book and trying to figure out a problem that she was having while we did this puzzle thing, I thought was great. So trying to switch up your routine to make better memories, I guess, is really what I'm talking about.
Interesting.
What are you taking out of the burn book?
What I'm taking out of the burn book is a function called remote start.
This is in the car?
This is in the car.
Okay.
And this has been a godsend over the past, say, 3-4 weeks. So I have a Volvo S60, our design. Lovely car, even after Jess crashed it. Still very nice. But you have an app. You have a Volvo app that is linked to your car. And it just shows you all the stuff that you would expect. It shows you, like, how much petrol you have in your tank and, like, how many miles that's expected to get you. It, like, tells you the location you parked in on a map. You can unlock the car, lock the car. You can make the lights flash or the horn beep. So like if you lose your car in a busy car park, you're like, shit, where is it? You can go on the app, make it beep. You're like, oh, there it is. And all that stuff. But one of the functions it has is remote start, which basically means you can turn on your car, engine and all, from your phone for up to 15 minutes. And after 15 minutes, it just turns off. It stays locked the whole time, but just the engine's running, the car's fully on. This has been an absolute dream over the last few weeks when there's been so much snow and so much frost overnight, because I look at my window each morning and look at the peasants scraping the ice off their windscreens with their little like cup of warm water, pouring it over their windscreen and just trying to scrape off the hardened ice, freeze, shivering in their like coats and scarves, standing there for 10 minutes, getting their bank card out to just chisel off a little window enough for them to see so they can drive off, rushing because they're already 10 minutes late. And it's also like it was -5 at the lowest point. I noticed one morning, like two and a half weeks ago, -5 in London at around 8-9 a.m. Horrid, horrid little start to the morning. They also, once they do that, they then get into their car, still wearing their big coat, still being able to see their breath, everything's freezing, up to the icebox. And then they just like trundle off to have like a miserable little day. Whereas I just open the app, flip on the car, engine turns on, which importantly heats up the engine as well, which is better for the car. But all of the climate functions come on in the car. Ooh. For the next 15 minutes. So
okay.
We're talking heated seats, heated steering wheel. We've got the aircon blasting warm air onto both, one, the entire cockpit, but angled towards the front and rear windscreen, which over time, this 15 minutes, will clear the windscreens of all frost and snow, as long as it's not too much. And there was only one day where it was like quite a bit. But yeah, it clears all of that. And I just go about the rest of my morning for the next 15 minutes, just finishing getting ready. Walk out my door. Don't even need to put my coat on. Can hold my coat because I know I'm getting into a car that is 22 degrees and nice and warm. The seat's warm. The steering wheel's warm. I can put my coat on the spare seat. The engine's ready, warm. Drive straight off. Also a godsend for Bonnie. Don't need to worry about her.
It's nice not to have that worry.
Like, do I need to put her in her pram suit? Okay, it's going to be freezing in the car. She needs to be wearing a coat. She's going to hate that because she's going to be wedged into a car seat wearing too many layers, and it restricts her ability to move her arms, which she hates. Don't need to worry about that. Just bring a coat with you for whenever you need it. You don't need it in the car.
You know what this reminds me of is English public schools, by which I mean elite private schools, for people not listening. Elite private schools called public schools. There's a practice called fagging. And like, okay. this is nothing to do with like the homophobic slur, but like basically older pupils would have younger pupils who they would call fags. And these would kind of be like their little like dog's bodies who would do shit for them. And one of the things is that like a load of these public schools back in the day, this was going on into like the 80s and 90s, but a load of them would have like outside toilet blocks.
I know where this is going.
And apparently they'd be cold as fuck. And one of the things they would get these kids to do is go out and sit on the cold loo seat to warm it up before they went out and used it.
Yeah.
And that's what this reminds me of, Pete. Like, it reminds me of that.
Yeah. I'm coming to a perfectly warm seat. I only have my seat set to one out of three. Like, it could be three times as hot. Well, if it's equal increments, it could be theoretically three times as hot as it is when I'm getting into the car. But that also just makes you feel like you're wet yourself, in my opinion, when the heated seats are too hot. But yeah, it's been frosty and cold for almost a month now, maybe longer. I haven't once used any de-icer. Got it in the boot, haven't used it. No de-icer, no scraping, nothing. Just open the phone, flick the car on. Because the reality is, if it didn't have that, I would need to go out, turn the car on and sit in it for 15 minutes cold while the stuff dissolves. Obviously, that's just a bad use of time. So that's why you then get the de-icer out and then some form of scraper. This, I can literally, I figure out roughly when I'm about to leave, do it 15 minutes before. Even if I'm delayed, the car just turns itself off and goes back to normal. But it's still obviously, there's no frost. Heat's retained within the car. Might not be quite as toasty when you get in it, but
sure.
Much more pleasant than -4, and it takes like no effort, and it's better for the car. So yeah, big win, remote start.
Yeah, no, it sounds great, man. I will literally never experience this in my life.
But I heard you were learning to drive. What happened with that?
When can I be asked? Like, that's the question. I probably will at some point. It's just like, you know, right now I'm like, when I'm not spending a car's worth of money on nursery every year.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the thing. I'm just like, I can go and do it. And then I'm like, well, what am I going to drive? Nothing. Like, the thing is, we don't, at the moment, we really don't have much need for a car. Like, I basically once a year think it would be good. Like, that's how infrequent it is. I know, like, some people we know, they like want to drive out to the countryside all the time, or like they have, you know, their parents live in fucking Surrey or something. And so they drive there. But for us, I said to Emma, I was like, realistically, how often would we use that car? And she was like, I guess we'd drive down to my parents every other Christmas and like maybe at Easter. And I was like, yeah. And actually, I would probably say, let's not do that because the train is easier. The train is easier. Like, it's so much easier to keep children happy on the train than it is in the car. Like, when they're locked in their car seats.
Yeah.
Like, that's a nightmare to do two of them as well when one of you's driving. In the train, you just like, they can get up, they can play, like, they don't feel sick. So at some point I will do it, but I'm just kind of like, it's always this attitude, you know, it's the same way that people are like, why didn't you learn when you were 17? I was like, because my dad used the car for work and then we weren't going to buy another car for me to drive. So I was like, if I learn to drive now, I will gain nothing. Whereas if I spend all the money that I earn on getting pissed with my friends, I will gain a lot. So that was kind of always the calculus. Anyway, that brings us to the end of our public episode for this week. Thank you very much to all of you listening. Thank you to everybody who signed up with the Patreon. Again, our subscriptions are going really well at the moment. Please do consider subscribing. We drop 2 extra episodes a month. You can send in your questions over there. Our episodes are almost always like ridiculously long, but we really do appreciate all of you. We'll catch a bunch of you next time. We'll catch a bunch of you over on the private side, and we'll see you later. Bye.